Off we go.
All right. Well, depending upon everyone's location, it's either good evening or good afternoon. And we're here for a bargaining session between the Board of Trustees team and the United Faculty of Florida team at the University of Central Florida. And as we get started this afternoon, I thought it was really important that the BO team let the UFF team know how grateful we are that we're able to meet with you today. We were not expecting to get together like this until September, as the CBA tells us we're going to open a couple of articles at that time. And I'm betting that you didn't think we'd be here this early either. But because of the passage and signing of SB 266, there was a need for us to call a meeting. And Craig is going to be addressing a little bit about why we call this meeting based on SB 266. But we just want to begin with a big thank you. Thank you for getting back to us. Thank you for helping us get this meeting scheduled.
We're glad to be able to do that. Yeah.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Talat. We appreciate how well I think our teams are working together. We're grateful. It makes this as enjoyable as it can be. There's a lot of work that we have to do, but we appreciate working with you and your team. As our team has said on a number of occasions, we prefer to have our bargaining meetings face-to-face. We understand not everybody can be on campus today, and we've agreed to this virtual format today. This is fine. It's good. While we're here today, one of the things that I want to do is just remind everybody that one of the accomplishments we had during our last academic year was we had come up with some ground rules for our bargaining sessions. And those ground rules apply when we're in person doing face-to-face bargaining, when we're in a virtual setting like we are today, or in a hybrid setting, something that we talked about last year. And I don't think we ever got to that point where we actually had a hybrid session. To the extent that we're able to, the BOT team would like to hold as many face-to-face meetings as we can. But the most important thing, I think, for all of us, for both sides, is to make sure that when we do meet, we're able to make progress. And we want to be able to meet often enough that we can continue to make progress, because we know come November, we're due to open full book negotiations. So throughout this academic year, we're going to be probably seeing a lot of each other. The way we would like to proceed today is in a couple moments, I'm going to ask Craig to talk to us about SB 266 and its impact on our collective bargaining agreement. Then you'll see that our BOT team is recommending some changes to six articles that would otherwise have been opened in November when we began full book negotiations. But we're going to try to open those now and work on those articles. Our hope as we go through these is that we sort of look ahead and say, maybe this is an opportunity to complete these six articles for that full book that wouldn't otherwise open till November. So I'd like to think of myself as an optimist. I'm thinking we have an early start on our full book negotiations, perhaps, which will mean that we have an early conclusion of those full book negotiations as well. So the articles that we would like to present to you today and discuss with you briefly our articles 20, Craig will be talking about that in a few minutes. I'll cover Article 9, Craig's gonna do 19, and I'll have Article 2 and Article 6, and Craig will finish up with Article 11. That's kind of the plan. So Craig, if it's all right, I'd like to turn it over to you and give you an opportunity to talk to us a little bit about SB 266 and its impact on our collective bargaining agreement.
Sure. Thank you all. Thank you, Chuck. Thank you,
members of the UFF. As Chuck said or alluded to, we're here today to for an early bargaining session to address some of the issues with our CBA that have developed based on the passing and enactment of Senate Bill 266. And for a brief overview, a portion of Senate Bill 266, which was enacted in this spring legislation, it creates a new section of the Florida statutes 1001.741, of which subparagraph two, I'm gonna paraphrase here, prohibits the appeal of personnel actions or decisions regarding faculty that are currently subject to grievance procedures beyond the level of a university president or designee, and requires that such actions or decisions have as their terminal step a final agency disposition, which is not subject to arbitration. And that provision of Senate, or that new statute went into effect July 1st. So it's in effect now. As a result of the passing or the enactment of that statute, effective July 1st, various provisions of the CBA were rendered invalid pursuant to Article 29.1A2 of the CBA. And that provision of the CBA, 29.1A2, says that a provision of this agreement shall be invalid and have no force or effect if it is rendered invalid by reason of subsequently enacted legislation. So we identified portions of the statute or the CBA that Chuck just referenced that we want to reopen that have been rendered invalid and notified the union of our position, I believe, in June, and arbitration is no longer part of the grievance process. Pursuant to Article 29.2 of the CBA, we, based on the invalidation of various provisions, and to be more specific, the ones we identified are 9.10 E through L, 9.11, 9.12, 19.5C, 20.8F, and 20.11B. Those are the ones that reference arbitration, but of course arbitration is kind of referenced throughout the CBA, so there's some cleanup that needs to be addressed in other provisions and articles as well. So we reached out pursuant to Article 29.2 to request that these provisions be reopened for negotiation, and that is why we're here today. And again, we thank you for being here. And then, as Chuck alluded to, being that we are going to be in full book starting this fall, there are some additional items in some of these articles that we wanted to propose now to clear up so as to not have to to bring them to your consideration now so as to not have to reopen provisions that we're already talking about. And Chuck, if you have anything more to say, otherwise I'm ready to go into Article 20. But
yeah, why don't you go ahead with Article 20? Okay. Unless Talat and her team have any questions for us at this point.
No, I think that's fine. I think, and also I just wanted to say also, Chuck, that you know, in terms of face-to-face meetings, you know, I'll let you guys know about my calendar because I do plan to be coming back. And so I'll try to make it face-to-face as many times as possible. So I think that's fine. But yeah, we are here to listen. We'd like to know what you guys have, you know, in the plans, and then we'll go from there. So please go ahead.
All right. So thank you, Charlie. So we've put together like some proposed revisions to Article 20. Charlie is now sharing them. Many of the changes are to remove reference to arbitration or to correct reference to the forms that are used in the title. So just, you know, in the title where Charlie is of Article 20, the striking of arbitration, same for 20.2, I believe there's some language being stricken in 20.3, some references to forms and clarification. I won't belabor those points because you all will see this and receive a copy of those, but those are just clarifications of striking reference to arbitration or clarifying the forms that are still in play, for lack of a better word. Moving on to 20.5, that's kind of the first place where we've proposed a few changes that aren't just striking the word arbitration. And the purpose of these revisions is simply for readability. I don't believe there's any substantive change. It's just kind of clarifying some things for readability purposes, just modifying the language, but ultimately the UFF would still have a grievance representative or the ability to have a grievance representative present at any meeting that includes a grievant, and that comes from the observer present language in line 75 that Charlie kind of just, I won't say highlighted, but made gray, for lack of a better word. So that's 20.5. Moving on to 20.82. Well, I'm kind of skipping in 20.7. It's just striking the word arbitration or proceeding. And then moving on to 20.82. This is something, a clarification that we wanted to just bring to your attention while we were talking about,
I think you want to just shift your, that's good.
Sorry, 20.82 down there, bring up while we were talking about article 20. So in the first line of article or 20.8A2, there's some clarification of language. You'll notice we struck the word discrimination and added the word error. Basically, this is the provision to address if there's been a mistake as to salary. We're not trying to change the process at all. We're just changing the name of it to an error as opposed to discrimination, because discrimination has a meaning in Article 6, and this has never been meant to be discrimination. It's if there was a mistake made, so we're calling it an error, but not changing any of the process. And then we've added the word pay slip, and that's just to address new terminology to address our processes, but nothing in substance changing there, just a clarification. Moving on to 20.8D, 20.8B, my apologies. Just some proposed, again, revisions for readability. And it's basically just clarifying that time limits can be extended by mutual agreement of the parties. And we just want to make clear, I mean, obviously, if the UFF is a party, then they would need to agree or not agree or ask for the extension. But oftentimes there are grievances that the UFF is not involved in. So just clarifying that extensions are between the parties that don't need to reach outside of that. Moving on to 20.AC2. Literally just a clarification of to reference the title of Article 19. So it just mirrors that. And then moving down to the next paragraph of 20.8D. So here we have proposed an addition of a provision. The language, which I'll just read quickly, but you can all see if you have a bill, if you have the screen up, but it just says the university may escalate a step one grievance to step two or de-escalate a step two grievance to step one to ensure the matter is addressed at the most appropriate administrative level or to speed resolution of a grievance filed at an inappropriate step. So it's not uncommon for grievances to be filed at the misfiled at the incorrect level, such as something filed at a step two that should go to a step one first, or vice versa, filed at a step one that should be at a step two. We just want to clarify the university has the ability to escalate or de-escalate that to make sure that it's heard for the first time at the appropriate step and or to speed up the resolution of something that may have been filed at the lower step in inappropriately. And obviously, if there's any questions, we can talk more about that. Next provision being 20.8D4. This provision has been kind of a proposed modification for practicality purposes. You'll note that the last sentence that is stricken has been added as the first sentence. So there's no change there. A grievant still has the right upon request to request a copy of any reasonably identifiable documents relevant to the grievance in advance of the step one meeting. Nothing's changed there. The language that's been stricken in the middle talks about where practical the step one reviewer shall make available to the grievant or grievance representative documentation referenced in the step one written summary prior to its issuance. So what was happening is the step one decision would be written. You don't know what documents are gonna be referenced in it until it's written, and then it's ready to go. But to comply with the wording of the current CBA, the documents that were referenced in the step one decision were being provided to the grievant shortly before the issuance of the decision, simply to comply, but for no practical purpose, because those same documents are gonna be attached to the step one decision. So we've just stricken that because there was really no practical purpose for it. It was just an additional kind of administrative step. Those same documents are still going to be attached to the step one, and the grievant is going to receive copies of them. So that's just kind of a clarification for practicality purposes. In 20.8E1, there's just a clarification to kind of mirror what must be articulated in the forms. And it's simply to clarify that if the step one grievance does not resolve the grievance, or excuse me, if the step one meeting and decision does not resolve the grievance, that the filing for the step two must articulate why the step one decision of the alleged violations is incorrect. And just to clarify what needs to be placed in the Appendix D form. So 20.8E1. Charlie, can you go up for a minute? Is that what I just spoke of? And just E1? Yep, that's what I just spoke of. So my apologies. So now moving on to E3. We are getting into more so the effect of Senate Bill 266 and the creation of Section 1001.741. We've modified that language to remove references to Step 3 because there is no longer arbitration, and these to make language that the Step 2 decision will be the final agency disposition as required by the statute, and added the time for that decision by the president's designee or the representative to be 45 days to make sure that that person has a chance to give a thought out decision. There's also language that allows for that person to ask for a request and says that the UFF shall not unreasonably deny the request. And we might want to modify that language to indicate the UFF or the grievant if the UFF is not involved. But the point of it being that it won't be unreasonably withheld. And then we've stricken all language to the arbitration. So I also wanted to point out, we're here to hopefully, you know, we've requested this to be able to bargain this issue. This is similar in substance to where we're at now and currently for grievances filed now, because the provisions addressing arbitration have been rendered invalid. So this is the process that the university is using now. We're trying to seek clarification of the CBA. So it's to all of our advantages to hopefully be able to agree upon the revised language. Some additional, and happy to answer any questions on that. The remaining language in 20.9, we just removed fax. I don't know that we've received any faxes in quite a while, so we're just clarifying that. We now have email, so there's really no need for faxes. And then in 20.11, 20.11B, 20.13, and 20.14, just clarifying and removing the language of arbitration or step three. So that is what we're proposing for purposes for compliance with the new statute. And again, consistent with how the university is proceeding at this time. If you guys have any comments or questions, happy to attempt to
address. Let me ask my colleagues if they have any questions.
I don't have any questions. It's pretty clear and explained very well. Makes sense.
Yeah, and your understanding of Bill 266 is that that there should be no arbitration, not that arbitration should not be the last step. Your understanding is that there should be no arbitration, right?
That's my to answer your question as best as possible, Talat, that's my understanding. Yes, also, yeah. I mean, short answer is that's my understanding. I guess practically speaking, I'm not seeing how it would make sense to have an arbitration prior to the next end. If it wasn't the final step, because that would just waste everybody's resources. But that's my understanding. And again, I mean, we can all look at the statute, it's not uncommon for attorneys to disagree about readings. So I'm not gonna say that mine is for everybody, but it literally says, and are not subject to arbitration. So I believe that my reading is that it's not subject to arbitration, period, not. Uh-huh. And then clarifies that whatever the final step, in our case, the step two, is the final agency disposition.
Sure, thanks. Robert, did you have any questions?
I do not.
Okay. And so today, this was the article that you wanted to talk about. Or did you want to discuss some other articles as well?
There are others. So there are others. This was certainly a biggie, not the only one. I think Chuck, in order, as he indicated, Chuck will speak about Article 9. I'd like to address 19. Chuck will do 2 and 6, and then me, 11.
Okay. I think, you know, what we should do is basically hear what you have in mind. And then, you know, of course, we'll take a look at it. We'll do our own consulting. And then we go from there. So please go ahead with the next.
Okay, well, thank you, Talat. And good job, Craig. Appreciate what you did. Talat, that's exactly what we expected, that we would share this information with you today. And then we'll have to get back together when you've had a chance to process what we're sharing with you. So I'm gonna speak for a few moments about Article 9. There are going to be a few places where I'm going to direct Charlie to so that we can focus on. But I want you to see that, for example, in lines 7 and 8, there are places like we add a comma or a letter S is missing, we think. There's some minor things in here that, you know, as we share these articles with you, please look at them and see whether or not you agree with those. But I want to talk about the more substantive changes that we're proposing that really have to do with arbitration. So 21 and 22 are two of the lines that I wanted to mention. Article 9 is the article that hosts our assignment dispute resolution procedure, the ADR procedure, which doesn't happen very often. But what we're proposing to do throughout Article 9 is no longer use the word grievance, because we've been referring to this as a dispute. And so throughout the article, the term grievance is replaced with dispute, and grievant is replaced with disputant. So you'll see that. And that's why, just to make it clear that we're separating these assignment dispute matters from the regular grievances. There are a couple of errors that we found in line 22, so I'm correcting some of the section numbers there, and I hope we've got that right now. In lines 26 and 27, there are a few words that are no longer relevant to our CBA. Right now in the CBA, a multi-year appointment is terminal. So there would never be such a thing as a renewal of a multi-year appointment. So we're proposing to strike that language from lines 26 and 27. Charlie, the next place I'd like to go is line 72, 73. Thank you. As we were reading through Article 9, these lines kind of sounded funny. It says the university properly has the obligation constantly to monitor and review the size and number of classes and other activities. We agree it's our responsibility to monitor and review, but it's not possible for us to do it constantly. So we would propose that we regularly monitor and review the size and number of classes and other activities. Again, as we're looking ahead and anticipating that some of the things that we may do, since this article would be open for bargaining to deal with the arbitration and dispute resolutions, we're hoping to take care of some other things that we see in Article 9. Charlie, the next place I would like to go, please, is 151 and 152. And this is just a cleanup, just getting, rather than putting the title of this article within itself, we just refer to this article. This is all contained here. And then the 160s, please. And you can see this is a great example that shows that we're proposing to replace the word grievant with disputant and grievance with dispute. We do the same thing in line 182, do the same thing in lines 194 and 195, also in 199. And I want to point out a change that we're suggesting in line 200. In 9.9b, we say that there's 14 days that an employee has to file this ADR dispute. And there's an inconsistency on line 200 where it said 30 days. So we're just making that consistent. And we think it's important that it's 14 rather than 30, because when we have a dispute about somebody's assignment, particularly an instructional assignment, as talked about here, we need to get that resolved. And waiting 30 days to begin that process is not good for anybody. So we're proposing that we make this consistent and use the 14 days. And looks like the rest of the changes that are on the screen right now are the same kinds of things that I mentioned. We're also clarifying that the ADR form that must be submitted is in Appendix F. As we continue into the 220s, we're seeing the same thing, the disputant and the grievant, and the grievance and the dispute. Lines 238 through 243.
So Charlie, would you tell us again why you want to change the grievant to disputant? I mean, we've still...
Because that's what we called it. It's always been called the dispute.
Ah, okay.
The ADR is an, you know, an assignment dispute resolution is what we're after. So that's why we just... the process has been different. Might as well use a different term than grievance. So that's the reason for that. With the ADR process as it has been in the CBA so far, when we do not have a satisfactory resolution at the second place here, it goes first to the supervisor who made the assignment, see if it can be resolved. If that's not resolved, it goes to the dean or the dean's representative. If the dean or the dean's representative does not reach a successful resolution of this dispute, the third step had been to go to mediation, which is essentially almost identical to the arbitration, but it's taking that final agency disposition and moving it outside the institution. And what we're proposing here is we would keep the same number of steps in the process, but instead of having the final step be a mediator, it'll be the university's representative who hears that. So if the dean and the employee are not able to resolve this dispute about the assignment, it would go to the university's representative. And as a consequence of removing the mediator and the mediation, there's a lot of the rest of this article that is stricken. But what we're trying to do is give the employee the same number of opportunities to talk to somebody about the issues with the assignment, but they're all in-house in this case, with the final one taking place with the university's representative. And throughout this, including adding this step with the university's representative, we're trying to keep this process moving forward. For example, and line 261, the university representative has 48 hours to render a decision about this, very similar to what was done with the mediation. So we're trying to preserve opportunities for the employees. If there is an issue, we want to get it resolved, and we want to do it in a timely way. Lines 267 and 268 say that the ADR process ends after part four. This is with the university representative. After part four, the ADR form is delivered unless the dispute was resolved at an earlier step of the ADR procedure. And then the rest of Article 9, we're proposing to strike. So that is what we are proposing for Article 9. Are there any questions about Article 9?
So again, the changes that you're proposing here, Charlie, part of it is, of course, a few things that just needed to be corrected. But otherwise, the proposed changes are reflecting the impact of SB 266. Is that right?
Yes.
I mean,
that's right.
Yeah. Okay.
Are there any other questions about Article 9?
I guess we will just proceed. Yeah. Go ahead, Dan.
Just one question. So, just assuming that the university representative is in-house and that could be provost, president, or just if you could unpack representative, how you're defining it. Is it defined anywhere else as who that could be, or is just wide open, or can you talk about that?
It's not wide open. What I would expect would happen is the president typically defers to the provost and the provost usually asks our office or somebody at the same level. Just as, you know, we handle the step two grievances for the most part, our office would probably be serving again as the university's representative at that final stage.
I did have a question that in your experience over the years, has your office ever reversed a decision taken at the step two level?
We've reversed some at the step one level.
The step one level, okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you for clarifying.
Dan and Talat, thank you for asking those questions. You know, something that is important to us, we really want to do the right thing. If there is a mistake that's made, whether it's a department chair or a dean, and you know, I know I've been involved in changing decisions both at the department chair level and at the dean's level. It happens because we want this to be right. If there is a violation of the CBA, we want to get that corrected. Our role is to make sure that the university abides by the terms of the agreement. And that's what we want to see happen. I'm not going to say that it happens often that we find that somebody's made a mistake and that there's been a violation by a chair or a dean, but it does happen. And sometimes, just as I know, your grievance representatives work with employees and sometimes stop a grievance that maybe isn't appropriate. There are times when we catch wind of things, we're working with a chair or something like that, and we can intercede and prevent what might have become a grievance later on. But our office wants to ensure that the institution abides by the terms of the CBA. That's what we want to do. And I hope Charlie's got the recording button pushed because I want to be on the record saying that that's what we want to do. Anything else on Article 9?
No, I think you know the what I'm wondering over here, because you know we are of course talking about what could be the possibilities, but in the sense that it is true on our end too that you know when there is a grievance, we also have an understanding of the CBA, and it is not, and we want to make sure that you know whatever is done is done according to the CBA, right? And so is there any room in what you're suggesting in discussions with UFF and your team if the interpretation of the CBA is in question?
Well, Talat, that's why we're sharing our thoughts on what these articles might look like in the future and inviting you to respond. Now, you know, we're going to be providing you these articles. We're here to negotiate and bargain with you if there are some ideas that you have that you know we think are appropriate and we can agree on those. We can change what we've got here. The whole point is to show you this is what our thinking is right now, but we're here to negotiate with you if there's something that we haven't thought of yet, you've got a better idea, there's some addition to what we've proposed that you want to suggest, we're inviting you to do that.
Sure. Okay, thanks.
Okay, Craig, I think we're ready to move to Article 19.
Great. Thank you. Okay, so Article 19, titled Conflict of Interest or Commitment Outside Activity. To skip ahead, the reason we're talking about this today is there have been revisions to 19.5 at the end to address the prohibition on arbitration. So those are at the end, and basically they modify the process beginning at line 77 or so, Charlie. The expedited grievance procedure in 19.5 is being modified to remove arbitration for reasons that I've already gone over for purposes of Senate Bill 266. While we were, you know, reopening this provision because of the modifications that need to be made to 19.5, we also wanted to bring up something that would have been brought up at the time of open book in 19.4. An issue that's been brought to our attention by the compliance office here at UCF is something pertaining to outside activities and financial interest forms. And in 19.4C, line 63, we just wanted to propose some clarified language, basically to be more consistent with UCF regulation 3.018. So the language is there to just provide some clarification regarding the reporting of outside activities. And you can review that language when it's provided to you. Then in subsection D, also some clarification for purposes of outside activities and financial interests occurring. And basically, this is clarifying that during a period in which an employee has no appointment with the university, their activities shall not constitute a conflict of commitment. However, there still may be a conflict of interest, and therefore reporting on the outside activity is still required. And this is, this is done twofold, or maybe threefold, to comply with university policies or the UCF's interpretation of the policy. But also, it's done to protect the university, but it's also being done, in our view, to protect faculty members to prevent an issue on the back end. So a potential conflict can be reviewed on the front end as opposed to not being reported and then finding out on the back end once it's already been begun that there's a conflict and having to address that issue that's already in place. So there's some clarification there. And these are some issues that were brought to our attention by compliance. Again, 19.5, the language, you can review that language, but it's to modify the grievance process so that the grievance process for this conflict of interest issue, so that the step two decision is the final agency disposition of the matter consistent with the statute and that no longer arbitration. Happy to answer any questions. Obviously, you all will review it and might have questions after doing so. But that is the reason for addressing 19.5. That comes from the statute. And while we were addressing Article 19, or let me say that again, we're addressing 19.5 because of the revisions imposed by Senate Bill 266. And we, while doing so, wanted to address 19.4 now to avoid doing so in a couple months.
I think Robert has a question.
Sure. Oh, hi, Robert. Sure.
Hi, Craig. How you doing?
Good.
Could you clarify what are the conditions or maybe descriptions by which someone does not have an appointment that this would cover?
I'll give you one that comes to my mind, and then Chuck, if I leave some out, let me know. But I suppose a 9-month faculty member, when they're not over the summer, if they don't have an appointment, so in July, if they're not teaching in the summer, is that a fair example, Chuck? I don't want to speak out of turn, and there might be others, but one that comes to mind is the 9-month faculty member while they're not under contract.
Yes, Craig, I would agree with you. The primary example is a 9-month faculty member who's on a short work break over the summer. They're still an employee. They signed a contract for the following academic year. They're still listed as an employee. They're still getting benefits as an employee. If they are looking at some activity outside, perhaps it's teaching, don't know for sure what it might be. If they're not under contract, it's clearly not a conflict of commitment. It's not going to interfere with the conduct of any of the assigned duties they have at UCF during the summer, because they have no assigned duties during the summer. But there are examples where somebody may be on a short work break, but because of the kinds of research that they do during the academic year and what they might become involved in during the time of their short work break, it's important that they at least let the university know about this and make a determination of whether there or not there is a conflict of interest. When I spoke to Christina Serra in the University Compliance Ethics and Risk Office, what she reminded me is we want to put this language in there for two reasons. One is to protect the employee and also to protect the universities as well. But in the event that an employee might become involved in some activity while they're not otherwise under contract that does create a conflict of interest, it's important to declare that and have that addressed. Is there some way to mitigate the conflict of interest, which is something that happens a lot with when conflict of interest come up? We look for ways to mitigate them. It isn't that, well, there's a possibility of a conflict of interest, you can't do this. That's not the point. What we want to do is figure out what's the best way to address this. And if there's a conflict of interest, there may have to be a monitoring plan. There may have to be some efforts to mitigate the conflict of interest. But in my opinion, this language is most applicable to the faculty that are very active with their research and also whatever it is they may be doing in the summer is related to that research or related to a sponsor of their research.
So Chuck, so I'm actually very aware of this one, and I don't see a change because if there's any other if you're have any other employment or not even employment, I mean, if you just get a some kind of a fellowship or something from somewhere else, we still have to report it. So I don't see how this constitutes a change. For example, I'm on sabbatical and I may be getting some money from the German university. So I still have to report it. I do it even now. So it's not a change.
Well, to a very large extent, I completely agree with you. But the language in the CBA said that the employee should still be aware of conflict of interest considerations. It didn't really say that they absolutely must file the conflict of interest form. Now it says that they shall report it. So again, in the interest of protecting the employee, in the interest of protecting
the university,
we're making it
clearer. That's good.
I love that word, clearer. Yes.
Yeah. So what I wanted to say is that we are practicing it because as soon as something like this happens, people, you get these emails and so on. Maybe people are not always declaring it. Okay.
Yeah, and that's come up.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's fine. It this makes it more clear that's okay. So it's basically even when you're on leave or you're on sabbatical or during the summer, when you are, since you're still an employee, and of course, in terms of, you know, your health insurance, you're always covered. So technically then it is at any time.
Right.
As long as you're employed. Yeah.
And Talat, the way I would summarize it, it's just always a good idea to declare. You may find out you didn't need to, but I don't think you can make a mistake by declaring.
Yeah. That's right.
Are there any other questions for Article 19 and Craig? All right, if we're ready to move on, I'm going to go to Article 2.
Okay, go ahead.
I direct your attention to line 24. That's it.
Okay.
Are there any questions? Charlie, while we're on a roll, let's just, all right, good. You've already got Article 6. Excellent.
No, we see it. Okay, now we see it, yeah.
Yeah, line 52. It's basically the same kind of change that we just saw in Article 2, just clarification. Looks like we got a missing word in line 53. In lines 56 through 59, we're trying to make sure we have the full name of the articles and the right article numbers. And we're also in line 56, recognizing that word dispute that we wanted to incorporate in Article 9. So the changes that we're proposing to Article 9 are having some spillover effects here in part. There are other things here in Article 6 that we're proposing to change that have nothing to do with Article 9. Lines 62 and 63, again, just making sure we got the correct names of articles. Line 66, just saying not everything's called a grievance. Sometimes something's called a dispute now instead of a grievance. And that is the extent of the changes that we are proposing for Article 6.
Okay.
And my partner in crime, Craig, has Article 11.
All right. So Article 11, the reason we're bringing it up is if we go to subsection 11.4 at around line 21, we have some modifications based on the other changes that we made. I've noticed on line 21, and it's not done, but it needs to be, the reference to the arbitrator needs to be stricken for the reasons that we've talked about. And then also to address changing of the term to dispute and dispute in 22 and 23, there's some revisions being made and some additional covered by this agreement at the last line. While we had this article open to address those issues, we did want to point out something that has been brought to our attention, or we noticed in reviewing this in 11.7, I guess before I go to 11.7, in 11.8 down at the bottom in lines 46 and 46, 47 and 48, there's some additional clarification of language similar to the other items to strike reference to arbitrator, include reference to dispute and create some clarification. So there's that. To 11.7, the issue that we wanted to address basically is for consistency with public records, laws. If a decision is overturned or discipline's overturned or something of that sort, the record shouldn't be removed from the evaluation file for purposes of compliance with public records laws. There certainly can be a reference, a note placed on the file or the decision overturning the discipline placed right on top of it, indicating that that decision has been overturned or was wrongly made, or depending on the scenario. But we wanted to modify the language about it being removed from the evaluation file, because that shouldn't be done for purposes of consistency with public records laws. That's pretty much it. I mean, you guys can read the 11.7, the exact language that we're providing, but ultimately saying anything that's nullified pursuant to resolution of a grievance or dispute shall be marked such. And I guess how it's marked would depend on the scenario, but what I envision, not exclusive, is taking whatever the correction is and just placing it right on top of it, so to speak, or in front of it, clarifying that it was incorrect.
Good. Any questions from my team? I guess not.
Well, Talat, we want to thank you and your team for bearing with us as we went through those articles. As you can see, while we were talking about those articles, that there are some things outside the articles, for example, appendices, that are going to be impacted by whatever the changes we ultimately make to these articles turn out to be. And because we're interested in the ideas you want to share with us, we have not made any attempt at this point to change those appendices right now. When we reach agreement on what the language is in these articles, we'll be able to work together on what the appendices ought to look like. But we think it would just be premature on our part to assume that, you know, we've got this all nailed and just change the appendices for now. We think we need to wait and see what the final versions of these articles turn out to be. So that's what we propose to do. So again, thank you for bearing with us today. We're about to send you 6 articles and ask you to look at them. And I was hoping we could take a couple of moments and talk about when you think we might be able to get back together and, you know, hear your thoughts on those articles.
So what I was wondering is that maybe we could just do caucus a little bit on, maybe you can put us in a break room, and I can find out from my colleagues what they think. And what kind of time frame, before we do that, what kind of time frame do you have in mind?
Well,
it's a lot of stuff.
Yeah, it is. And we've got a lot more to come with the other articles that are going to be on the horizon soon.
Right.
I was looking at 2 weeks, but 2 weeks from today is not good for our team. And I was thinking about 2 weeks from tomorrow, which is the 24th, is a possibility. If you're willing to go on a Thursday, the 24th, I think would work for us. The next Wednesday that would work is the 30th.
Mm-hmm. Of August. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. I talk it over with Dan and Robert. Charlie, I don't know how good Charlie is at putting us.
Should we exit for 10 minutes and come back? Can we do that?
Oh, Charlie. Yeah, we could do that.
I'm sorry. Charlie's already taken care of this.
Oh, okay.
Do we say on the recording that Charlie's the best?
Hold on a second. So I need to stop the recording. Pause. There we go.
All right. Yeah. So Is everybody here?
Yeah, Sarah had to drop off. She said,
no problem.
See you next time. She had another meeting to go to.
Okay. So, all right. So, Chuck, so we were thinking about the dates, and particularly with classes starting and so on. There's one thing, I will be back in person but that is middle of September. Is that feasible?
I guess I would hope we could do something before then, but.
But if we do 15th of September, I can do face to face.
We can't do.
Do we do one more virtual before then, and then do face to face on the 15th?
We can't do face to face on the
15th of September.
Yeah, anytime between the 15th and the 22nd, yeah, I can
Chuck,
do face.
You cannot do the.
You're 15th. Either out of the office, Chuck, or in an arbitration. So no.
Uh-huh.
So that the 15th, after the 15th, we can do that. We can set up a Zoom. Did you have any August dates that worked for a Zoom, Talat?
August dates, you were 30th was one that you were suggesting, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So why don't we? That's a Wednesday, right?
Yes.
Yeah. That could work.
Okay. And then in September, we'll look for dates after the 15th.
Between the 15th, anytime between the 15th and the 22nd.
Okay. So we could do the 20th, for instance.
That would be fine.
I see. Okay. All right, I'll make arrangements for August 30th. And that looks pretty good for everybody, right before the football closure.
What happens? So 30th. No, I think I'm fine. Yeah.
I don't know how long it could take because I have open house for my son at his at Lake Howell High School.
So here's one thing. I guess we don't do anything on Fridays, do we? Could we do it on the Friday that is after the 30th of August, which would be September 1? Is that right? Is September 1 a Friday?
It is.
Or could we do it on that Thursday? Could we do August 31st?
We could do
August 31st, which is complicated because we have a home football game and an early closure.
Oh, that's right. That's
the
right.
The 24th, we could do the 24th to lot if you want a Thursday.
No, let's do the 30th.
August 30th from 1:30 to 3, and then September 20th is our next tentative date.
Yeah.
We can talk and maybe firm that up.
Yeah.
Okay.
If there's any change, let's agree on this. And then I'm also going to look at my own schedule and so on. And if we can make any change to do it before the 30th, then I'll let you know.
And Dan,
but right now, let's go for that.
Dan,
what did you, what about your, you had something with your.
It is Lake Howell.
Yeah, Lake Howell has its open house that afternoon.
Which afternoon?
August 30th. August
30th. So do we want to do the 24th? I don't have my calendar in front of me.
24th classes just opened that week.
Okay. All right.
And some folks are putting together the PTR packets. So there's a lot going on in August.
Okay.
You have 30 days to put together those 5-year PTRs. It's a lot of information.
Oh, that is a problem. And I have two people right. Both Robert and Dan have to do it.
What do you have there, Chuck? I was gonna say what can we do on the 29th, but I'll tell you what, Talat, we can do this offline. We'll figure it out.
Okay.
Communication while you're looking at your calendar, okay?
Yeah. Yeah. Why don't I talk to my colleagues and then get back to you maybe tomorrow or something like that. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, we'll do that. Is anything else for the good of the order then?
I don't think so. I think we've accomplished what we had hoped to this afternoon, and
all right.
Wish you all a great rest of your day.
Okay, well, Well, thank you so much.